Technology, it's such a big part of our lives. It can be fun, it can be convenient, just like this podcast, which is why University of Missouri Healthcare is proud to support podcasting on KBIA. Technology can also save your life. That's why so many people turn to University of Missouri Healthcare. Its hospitals and clinics offer you the latest technology, plus a medical team whose skill and knowledge are unparalleled. You know technology makes everyday life a lot better. Well, it's true for your healthcare, too. University of Missouri Healthcare, the care you deserve from the team you trust.
Hello and welcome to Under the Microscope, KBIA's weekly look into stories in science, health, and technology. I'm Raymond Tungekar. On today's show, we'll hear a report about taxpayer-subsidized crop insurance. But first, unlike their cold water relatives, Humboldt penguins live only in South America, along the rocky Pacific coast of Chile and Peru. The St. Louis Zoo's Michael Masek has been monitoring the penguins there, tracking their health and numbers. Masek is back in Peru again, in a coastal reserve called Punta San Juan, where Humboldt penguins nest by the thousands. Before he left, he told St. Louis Public Radio's Veronique LaCapra that this time he's helping to lead what he calls a sustainable guano harvest.
Guano is poop. Guano is basically bird feces. It sounds really gross. When you actually get there, it's not as gross as it sounds. I mean, the guano actually comes from a bird called a guanay cormorant, and they nest by the millions in Punta San Juan. And so through the years, through the centuries, through the millennia, they have nested in these areas, and it builds up, and believe it or not, it can be as thick as, you know, 10, 20 feet. Now, as you're approaching Punta San Juan, you smell Punta San Juan before you see it. It's a very sort of ammonia kind of smell to it. Once you get there, it kind of, you know, you get used to it. But the guano itself, because it's such dry desert, it actually looks like clay. So you're not walking on a bunch of bird poop. It looks like clay, but it's very, very high in nitrogen, and it's a very valued commodity for domestic use in Punta San Juan for fertilizer. So they still harvest it. They call them guaneros, the people who actually harvest the guano. But it used to be that they just went in there and they brought in trucks and people digging, and they didn't pay any attention to where the animals were. And there's not just penguins there. There's fur seals and sea lions and the cormorants and Inca terns and gannets and all sorts of other birds and animals. The last time they looked at this in 1995, when it was not done sustainably, about one-tenth of the Peruvian penguin population was lost through the harvest.
What is the major threat of harvesting guano to penguins?
Yeah, well, so these coastal areas are very rugged, lots of rock, sort of like the Northwest, and these birds burrow into the ground. Well, they can't burrow into bedrock, so they actually burrow into the guano that provides a substrate for them. Well, if you remove all that, and they take it down to the bedrock, they're on their hands and knees with little tools just taking the very last bits off.
The guaneros.
The guaneros are, yeah. So that basically leaves the penguins to lay their eggs on the rocks, and they become very vulnerable, and the survivability decreases dramatically. So that's probably the greatest impact, is that it removes their substrate for nesting habitat.
Tell me about the sustainable harvest. How does that work?
Well, so this first sustainable harvest we had in 2001, and we had another one in 2007. So what we do, we bring a group of both American and European and Peruvian biologists down. We do some education with the guaneros. The guaneros are not local people. They're actually the Andean people that come from the Andes, and they traditionally have always come down to the coast to harvest the guano. So we do a number of presentations with them, telling them why this is important. We do mark off the areas. So we basically delineate the areas that can be harvested and the areas that should not be touched. And, of course, that's where all the animals live.
Okay, so I have to say I'm having a little bit of a reaction, like this is Americans and Europeans sort of parachuting in and telling the Peruvians what to do. So how have you handled that? What's the reaction been of local Peruvians?
Well, everything is through collaboration. And I should say our original involvement in 2001 was by invitation. It was actually our Peruvian colleagues, primarily at the University de Cayetano Heredia in Lima. It was actually them that invited us in because they felt having the presence of people from the outside would have a greater impact, knowing that other people were watching. And of course, the success would be walking away from all of that and having it being taken over by Peruvian colleagues. And more, we have more Peruvian students working there. So this is probably the one project where we have the most sort of Americans and Europeans there. Generally, you know, we're just there to help.
Corn prices surged to a new record high earlier this week as the worst drought in more than 50 years continues to plague more than half the country. Despite the drought, many crop farmers are expected to emerge largely unscathed thanks to taxpayer-subsidized crop insurance. As Congress moves to make the program even more generous, St. Louis Public Radio's Adam Allington reports that some are beginning to question if the subsidies are necessary at all.
This is a story about weather, farming, and the role crop insurance plays in fixing the problems caused by Mother Nature. Steve Turner farms about 2,700 acres in Cass and Mason counties in Illinois. About one-third of those acres are irrigated, but the rest, he says, are parched, withered, and effectively dead, like this field we're standing in.
That plant just literally died. And some of this is dying and falling over, and even this, it ain't going to take much to break it over.
Turner says this summer is the worst drought he's seen since the 1980s, and the 0.2 of an inch of rain mean what little corn survives will be of poor quality. With much of his corn already toast, Turner says if he doesn't get some rain over the next couple weeks, his soybean crop might also be wiped out. Thankfully for Turner and 85% of corn farmers, crop insurance will compensate him for most of his losses.
It acts as a stabilizing agent. It's what allows us to move through years like this and still have a viable and really functioning food production system.
Nathan Fields is an economist for the National Corn Growers Association. He says it's years like this which prove the necessity of the crop insurance program, which are supported by hefty federal subsidies to both farmers to pay their premiums and to the crop insurance companies to cover losses.
When you have large weather events like this, if the insurance companies are hit with this number of claims all at once, it threatens the viability of that industry as well.
As bad as the drought is, Fields estimates that national corn production will only be down around 12% to 15% over last year. But even that small of a decrease could translate into additional tens of billions in payouts from taxpayers, which is how the system is designed to work.
Well, it's working if you're a farmer. I'm not sure it's working if you're a taxpayer.
Bruce Babcock is an agricultural economist at Iowa State University. Despite the drought, he says high prices for grain and meat mean the overall strength of the agricultural sector has never been better. And the argument that our food security depends on crop insurance just isn't true, even if some farmers are forced out of business.
The competition for land right now is fierce. There'd be so many people bidding on that land next year because the prices are so high that it's not like agriculture is going down because of this drought. You know, that's what people that justify these subsidies want you to believe.
Babcock claims crop insurance should be treated like any other farm expenditure, say fertilizer or diesel fuel. But back in Illinois, farmer Steve Turner says removing all safety nets for farmers would only take agriculture back to the boom and bust of the Dust Bowl era. And the idea that farmers aren't vested in the outcomes of their harvest is just ridiculous.
This is an insurance product. The government might have subsidized it and paid a little bit of it out here for me, but I'm also writing a check for insurance policy right here. And by gosh, when you write a check for insurance policy, you've got to have the coverage and you got to have it come through like a year like this.
I'm Adam Allington in St. Louis.
And that's it for this week's Under the Microscope. Thanks for listening. Just a reminder that you can hear this episode and others by visiting our website, kbia.org.